So, good morning. So this is going to be our third one in this series where we are trying to use the parasha. We won't always stick with the parasha, but for now in Bereishit we do. Use the parasha in order to highlight reading techniques that can be used for whenever one is learning Tanakh. In other words, transferable ideas, which we can see in the weekly parasha, which help us appreciate the story, which whenever we are going through Tanakh, they are tools which can be applied in order to add a lot of depth and beauty to how we understand the stories themselves. So just a sort of a quick review to get us back in the mind. We started Parashat Vayera, and on that week we looked at the significance of names, focusing specifically upon the story of Yishmael, Gerush Yishmael, expulsion of Yishmael, and how almost so many different names are used for him, with the exception of Yishmael, which is never used for him. And we pointed out how we can track, by tracking what a person is referred to as and what they are called and by whom, you can see a huge amount. We didn't do Chayei Sarah, but last week, Toldot, we looked at seemingly the very simple question of where does a story start and where does a story end? And depending upon where one puts the beginning and end mark, the nature of the story can change dramatically. And we focused on Perek Kaf Zayin, which is normally considered to be the story of the theft of the bracha, of the blessing that Yitzchak intended to give to Esav by Yaakov. And that raises all sorts of questions of Yaakov's deceit. And what we simply did was we started the story two verses earlier and we ended the story two verses later. And we saw that the story therefore changes dramatically. The story in fact begins with Esav marrying women from the local population, which causes a lot of distress and grief to his mother and father. And the story ends with Esav marrying the daughter of his uncle Yishmael, in other words, marrying within the family, having seen the grief and distress he had caused his parents. And so if you start and end at a different point, then the story changes dramatically. Today we're going to look at another technique. And the introduction to the technique, you could probably really consider it a whole cluster, multiple techniques, which will come to the different varieties. But if you like, the name for the category as a whole would probably be self-referential techniques. What does that mean? That the Tanakh as a whole frequently refers to itself. It refers to other parts of the Tanakh and places the particular story that it is talking about in reference to another place in Tanakh. Now, it can do this in multiple ways. The sort of the classic way of doing this is what is called a parallel, a biblical parallel, where two stories at different points in the Tanakh seem to bear some striking resemblances to one another. Either they could be linguistic similarities, in other words, similar language is used, or they could be thematic. The stories themselves seem to be very similar. So there are all sorts of different ones of those, and we will definitely come to them. What I want to look at today is something which, in a sense, is much, much simpler. I don't have a formal phrase for it, but basically throwaway lines, almost, what we say in English, a throwaway line. We mean like a couple of words, and it's something that somebody says, right? So, you know, well, it doesn't sound like, you know, a throwaway line, a simple comment, you know. In contrast to the parallel, which I just mentioned, which is something which is extended, you know, you might, let's take, you know, a very classic one, which maybe we'll do another time. Okay, Yosef and Esther, that's a very classic one, you know. The stories of Yosef and Esther don't at first seem to have obvious thematic parallels, but they have many dozens of linguistic parallels, right? The stories are compared one to another at multiple points. Are you joining us, Sam? Awesome. Shulamit, do you want to get two more chumashim? So we're not going to look at those. We're not looking at dramatically extended parallels in the way in which you have in a case like Yosef and Esther. When I say a throwaway line, I mean much simpler, smaller ones. We're going to be looking at two in our parasha. So turn to, we're in parasha Vayetze, Perek Kaf Tet, chapter 29, on page 150. So we're going to be looking sort of from Pasuk Kafhei, verse 25. So the background, the story is, of course, that Yaakov has fallen in love with Rachel and has, as you understood, worked for 7 years for Rachel's hand in marriage. Lavan switches Rachel for Leah, deceiving Yaakov. This is the little passage that we're going to look at. So just again, to ground the technique, what we're going to try and catch is a phrase that is used which seems to refer to some other story in Tanakh, and this is not going to be a difficult one. These are well-known stories. If you miss it, then you understand the basic words, but if you catch it, you're going to catch a much sort of greater depth to what is being said. Once we've caught, well, we've got sort of two different things to do. The first thing is what's called the what. What is the parallel? And then the second step is the why. What does the parallel mean? Okay, so it's important not to separate out those two points. Okay, so I'll read it, and any of you shout out if you think you've caught the point. It was in the morning after the wedding. Yaakov thinks he's married Rachel, but lo and behold, hinehu Leah. It's Leah there. Vayomer el Lavan. Interestingly, we don't hear anything of what Yaakov says to Leah. That's not captured in the story. But he says to Lavan, Mazot asitali. What have you done to me? Halo v'Rachel abadati imach. I was working for you for Rachel. V'lama rimitani. Why have you deceived me? V'yomer Lavan. Lo ye'asechen bimkomenu. It's not our minhag in this place. Latet hatsi'ira lifnei habechira, to give the younger before the elder. Male shavu azot, let's wait out this week. Fenitna lecha gam etzot ba'avoda, asher ta'avodim adi od sheva shanim. Wait another 7 days, you can marry Rachel, and then you'll work for me for another 7 years. Anybody catch it? A phrase which, I don't mean it's an identical correspondence to words which have been said elsewhere before. We're going to come to one of those shortly, but what I think is a clear reference to another story. Meaning?
The older before the younger.
Good, right. What is the older before the younger that we might be thinking? So, I mean, of course you might say, well, that's just the story of operation as a whole, right? But something more precise than that?
Rabbi Avod Seir.
Go on, unpack.
Like, with Yaakov and Esav.
Good. Brachot. Brachot, right? As in, people see how simple it is? So again, we're going to divide it into two stages. There's the what, and then there's the why, okay? Yaakov, 7 years he's worked, that's a significant amount of time, and for a very significant thing, a woman who he very clearly loves. And he says, you know, all sorts of, you know, anguish in his voice, clearly, Lama Rimitani, why have you deceived me? Anyone remember the Rimitani? Where's, or at least a version of that? Where have we seen that most recently? What does Yitzchak say to Esav? Yitzchak says to Ba Achicha B'mirma. Your brother came deceitfully. That was in chapter 27. And he took your bracha, right? And Esav cries out, great anguish. The bracha, which was intended for the bechor, for the firstborn, right? Lavan says to Yaakov, Armin Hag is not to give the younger before the elder. I mean, if you're not sensing the parallel, then maybe like you just understand that like he's just saying that some or that that's what they do. If you get the parallel, I mean, what's this is now moving into the why, right? But I mean, I think the why is pretty clear in this case. What's he doing?
Digging at him.
Right, right. Wink, wink. Right. But I mean, it could work on a whole number of levels. Sort of how you understand the. How you understand the emotion of it.
Does Laban know?
Yeah. Do we think Laban knows?
Presumably, Yaakov told him in the 7 years they were working together what he was doing there.
I mean, does the text state explicitly that Laban knew? No. This parallel certainly seems to give you the feeling that he did know. So let's now think out the why. So again, the parallel, the what is very straightforward, right? Chapter 27. At home, Yaakov has made this, or you know, together with Rivka, has made this dramatic decision to trick their father into giving the bracha that was intended to the older son, to the younger son. Now, three chapters and many, many miles and 7 years later, Yaakov is at the receiving end of the act of deceit. And once again, it's a deception where the interplay is between younger and older. Okay, so now let's think about the why. What does it do for us? Okay, so Sivya, you said digging at him. I think that's definitely sort of powerful and there, like you sort of feel him saying, you know, wink, wink, right? You know, are you so clean? Right.
It's also if you think of like Laban in general, like it's also kind of a dig at Rivka in a sense. Because she was the one who organized like the whole situation, like that's his family and
Right. You know, you are
don't pretend you're any different from me, right? Yeah.
Right. Rivka is my sister.
Yeah.
Right? Rivka put you up to what you've done. Guess what? Right? You know, don't pretend to be so clean that you're above this. Anything else? Any other sort of levels to the why? I think you might see. You know, of course, it comes from the words of Laban, but you might also see sort of like a hashgacha element in it, you know, the way in which sort of like God is giving the message that this is simply what we call midah keneged midah, right? That, you know, a person measure for measure, a person receives exactly what they get, what they deserve. If they act in a certain way, then
you
reap what you sow. I mean, that's a very classic Tanakh model of how people live in the world. If you do a certain action, you should expect to be paid back in kind.
Stories, as far as the story itself and the allegory of it all,
yeah,
is also kind of like it points out. I mean, reap what you sow, but it also just points out like human nature in general, you know.
Go on, elaborate on that.
Yeah, we all have our own certain desires that we want and that we truly want to reap.
Mm-hmm.
And then things don't always go the way you want them to go.
Right.
Or they go the way, or you can still get them with a little bit more, you know. Again, reaping what you sow. So you have to kind of take care of the things that you kind of have to take care of the mess you've made in order to get through, you know, to get to where you want to be.
Right.
And some, you know, I think it just shows that in human nature, we all create obstacles for ourselves.
Right.
And then you know, ultimately we'd like to just flow right through and not have any obstacles.
Yeah.
But then along the way we create obstacles, not even knowing sometimes that, oh yeah, this was, oh.
Yeah.
I believe the analogy is, oh, my bad.
Wouldn't you call it karma?
What's that?
Wouldn't you call it karma in your other world?
I was trying to avoid the Sanskrit word, but yeah, I think it's very much is karma.
It's become English.
What's that?
It's become English, karma.
It's definitely karma. I mean, and that's just, you know, when you talk about karma, that's just parallel, because also...
Is karma.
We're going to bring in the word karma. There's also this other word that goes along with karma, dharma.
Dharma, yeah.
Which is really our path.
Right.
You know?
Destiny.
And Yaakov doesn't like it, but it's his path. All along, you know, setting up and overcoming struggle is Yaakov's dharma.
Right.
Throughout his whole story.
Right.
It's like this dharma, and if you're really going to connect it, it's like, how do you connect it also to his father's?
Right.
Of like, they're creating something, this incredible,
powerful.
This incredible new path, and then like all of a sudden, it only took a generation before somebody's like really screwing up and also having to overcome, you know, something that's quite painful of like, oh, what'd you do to me? You know, like, I can't even love the way I want to love.
Right. All right, let's look at one more, okay? And this one is the one that I've remarked
really
upon.
Thank you very much. Yes, sure. Beautiful.
Thank you. I'll show you the next one with you afterwards, Sam. I'll send you the recording. Okay, the next one is just a few verses later. And if anything, it's actually more powerful. Beginning of chapter 30, of course, like such a theme of this chapter is just the tragedy of... what it means to marry both Rachel and Leah and the rivalry between them and, of course, the ability or inability to have children. Perek Lamed, chapter 30, at the beginning. V'tere Rachel ki lo yalda liYaakov. Rachel saw that she was unable to have children with Yaakov. V'takane Rachel ba'achota, became very jealous of her sister. Vatomer el Yaakov, she says to him, Hava li banim, give me children. Vim ayin, and if you don't, if this doesn't happen, meta anochi, I die. Now, there's a huge amount to say about this whole interaction, but our point here is not to unpack the whole interaction. We're just interested in looking at this technique of the throwaway words which reference another story. V'yichar af Yaakov barachel. Yaakov's anger is aroused. V'yomer, and he says, Hatachat Elohim anochi. Am I in place of God? Asher mana mimech privaten. Who has withheld from you fruit of the womb of children? Right? Don't shout at me, don't blame me. This isn't on me. This is on you, right? You know, this is your problem. You're the one with the difficulty. Don't speak to me about it. Speak to God about it. Look, I've been able to have many children, right? Look at Leah. So, you know, we're not going to go into the dialogue itself, except simply to say that whilst Yaakov might be correct on a simple technical level, he is massively incorrect in terms of how one should speak to their spouse in any case of real emotional difficulty, and all the more so if it's a case as sensitive and painful as pregnancy and childbirth. Just to, you know, give you one midrash of, you know, which says it. This is the Ramban, if I remember correctly, who says strongly that the role of the righteous, and arguably the role of any good husband, is to actually be with the person in their difficulty and pray for them. That's exactly what Yitzhak had done. But Yaakov doesn't do it and doesn't give any sort of nice language. In any case, did anybody catch the phrase which references another story?
Yes, the phrase, Yosef says that at the very end, Parshas Vayechi, to his brothers, for us to think he's going to kill them.
This phrase, many, many years later, is said almost identically, with the exception of a single letter, which I don't think is significant. The very last chapter of Bereishis as a whole, Parshat Vayechi, Perek Nun, chapter 50, page 288 in the Chumash, where the story finds itself with Yaakov having died, the brothers now realizing that perhaps Yosef had not sought to have his revenge against them for everything they did to him simply because their father was alive, right? Maybe they even thought of Esav, right? Esav saying, my father's death will come soon and then I will kill Yaakov, right? Now, once the father figure is out of the way, then that allows for the bloodletting between the brothers. And so now they think, gosh, maybe now it's up. This touches on the fascinating question of whether or not Yaakov knew, whether he was told, right? Again, a major question that the Torah doesn't answer and leaves us to think about it. But here's what they say. They go, Pasuk Yudchet, verse 18. V'yilchu gam echav, before Yosef, fall before him. V'yomru, and they say, Hinenu lacha la'avadim. We are your. I think best to read that as slaves, right? We are going to be your slaves, right? You sold us into slavery. We sold you into slavery. No, we give our own punishment, right? We are your slaves. Vayomer alehem, Yosef says to them, Al tira'u, don't fear, ki hatachat Elohim. Ani, am I in place of God? V'atem chashavtem alai ra'a. You thought evil for me. You wanted to do evil for me. Elohim chashva l'tova. But God intended this for good. He didn't intend it for evil. And it's all worked out for the best, right? By selling me into slavery, ironically, you ended up putting me in Mitzrayim. I was able to rise to the position of prominence that I am in. And I've been able to, on account of that, save the family. Okay? Now, on the face of it, these are much more... So that's, again, two steps. What, why? The what is now clear. Hatachat Elohim Anochi, Hatachat Elohim Ani. Yaakov's words to Rachel saying, am I in place of God? Are almost exactly replicated by Yosef saying to his brothers, am I in place of God? But on the surface, the stories seem to be quite different, right? And what the phrase means, am I in place of God, seems to have changed, right? Yaakov is saying it to Rachel as, I can't help you. And Yosef is saying it to his brothers as an act of mercy and as an act of kindness. So to pick apart the why, therefore, is going to be a little bit trickier than the previous case. So what would you say the why is? What are some of the options of what the parallel means? So here is the Ramban. Okay, the Ramban quotes a midrash on the verses in our parasha, Vayetze, Yaakov saying to Rachel, "Don't come to me with your complaints about not being able to have children. Am I in place of God? Speak to him." Amar lo Hakadosh Baruch Hu, the Ramban quoting the midrash, said God to him, "Kach onina tamiikot. Is this how you answer a person in distress? Chayecha, as you live, your punishment for what you've just done. Shebanecha atidin la'amod lifnei bana. Your children, meaning of Leah, will stand in front of her child, i.e. Yosef, and he will say exactly the same words. In other words, for your cruelty, which you have just exhibited, again, similar to the idea we said before, midah keneged midah, right? It actually is quite parallel. She will have a child, and you will see that the power imbalance that you now have over Rachel will be dramatically reversed to a different power imbalance that her child will have over your children. Right? So, in that reading, the why is really a midah keneged midah. This is punishment. Right? Can you think of a different reading? Smile means you've got one?
It's a question of whether we want to look at what Yaakov is saying as definitely for sure negative. Go on.
How would you read it I mean, again, it might be technically correct. Seemingly, he is able to have children, but it's certainly not morally or in a relationship way a good thing. But go on, I'm open to... So I want to suggest as follows. Now, the midrash that the Ramban quotes, it appears in a number of places. That's like the general midrashic read on this parallel. I haven't ever found it written in any place what I'm about to say, but I think as an idea, it's really quite compelling. Even let's zoom out. The story of Bereshit as a whole is a massively tragic story of interfamily tension and strife, starting all the way from Adam and Chava through Cain and Hevel, all the way on down, very much continuing once you get to the family of Avraham, whether it be Sarah, Hagar, maybe you even include Lot, Yitzchak, Yishmael, Yaakov, Esav, and you know, maybe it really reaches ahead in the stories with Yaakov between Rachel and Leah, and all the more so his children. And it's an extremely painful story in that way. Part of also what makes it so beautiful. But at the very end of Bereshit, literally the last page, that phrase, Hatachat Elohim Ani, takes us back, reminds us of this story many years earlier, which completely captures the pain and the difficulty. And of course, you could very easily ask a question: how much is the brother's hatred and jealousy of Yosef when he's a young man a refraction of the tension between the parents? I mean, it's a very clear, open question. This line at the end of Bereshit takes us all the way back to there. But at the very end of the book, rather than it being another act of cruelty or of not listening or of, you know, exercising one's power over the other, as the brothers certainly had done by selling Yosef into slavery, the exact same words are actually used for a completely different message. Hatachat Elohim Anochi goes from being, don't talk to me, I'm not interested, it's nothing to do with me, talk to God about it, and these cruel, harsh words from Yaakov, actually goes to being the kindest, most sensitive, most forgiving words that you could possibly expect to hear from somebody, especially somebody who's gone through what Yosef went through. They speak remarkably to his ability to somehow have, you know, gotten over his, you know, his rage and his upset, and he's saying to them, it's okay, You did what you did. Hashem will judge that. I'm not gonna take anything against you. I'm gonna look after you, and I'm not gonna seek to have my revenge against you. And that line, therefore, like serves as the antidote, the tikkun, the closure to this specific story of Yosef and his brothers, but really to the story as a whole, of how families relate to one another and of how people talk to one another, which was captured in the original problem of Yaakov saying to Rachel, Hatachat Elohim Ani. And so far from it being Mida Keneged Mida, as it was in the Midrash that the Ramban quotes, it actually turns into being the tikkun for the story as a whole.
I think you can even potentially expand on this, that question that I've never really thought of, but I just thought of now in this context, is how does this such a small focused story on one family that has so much strife and turmoil transform into what Shmos is? At Shmos, suddenly it's B'nai Yisrael, it's Am Yisrael, and we kind of just take it for granted that, of course, they grew and it's a nation, whatever, whereas every single generation in Bereishis, super detailed story where one person was weeded off and one person was continued on, and suddenly it's just like, oh yeah, they're a nation. Perhaps the answer is, this is exactly what caused it. At the very end of Bereishis, the family finally mended and was able to transform from a family into a nation because of Yosef's forgiveness here.
Hmm.
And had it not been for that, it would have just been Yosef carrying it on, and we would have been back to square one. Right.
Yeah, fair mode. Wow, never thought of it in quite as stark a way, but essentially what you're saying is you could look at much of Bereishit and you could think this is not a family who is going to be able to stay together in the long term, right? And certainly Yosef had an opportunity at this point to understandably take his revenge. I think, you would understand if he had done so, but his withholding of that is what allows for the whole rest of the future. Yeah, fair. Shkoyach. I hope both the technique and the parasha point was clear.